When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape. Very excited to be here. As always, I'm Christian Blatt. I'm the DJ. He's the rapper, Eric Connor. Count Eric Connor, how are you today, sir?
I am keeping it real up in the field. Thank you very much.
Yes, that is where we like to keep things real. So when we were last with you, we teased this week's show. We were very excited. We were going to devote an entire show to Sony Pictures' latest release, Madam Web, and we are still going to talk about it. But as the days ticked by, we came across a number of things we have to talk about, like a live-action Miles Morales, but honestly, it's not that soon. A casting information about the Fantastic Four, and we will definitely talk about that. But where we begin is this big news that just broke this morning, which is a trailer and a release date for X-Men 97, the animated film, the animated series, continuation of the classic animated series from 1992. We're going to start there, and we'll work our way backwards, and we'll work our way down. So low down that eventually we'll talk about Madam Web. But until we get to that, Eric, yes. I want your immediate reaction to the news that we're actually getting X-Men 97 sooner than we thought, and just your general feelings for us getting that very series, you know, the fact that it's going to exist at all.
It's exciting. And you know, X-Men, was it 92, right? Was the original.
Correct,
and
yes. The original was 92, yeah.
Yeah, so I was in college then, or senior year of high school. So I was kind of like, probably not watching all that much animated stuff at that stage, but it's definitely one over the years I've caught up with to an extent. Always loved the X-Men stories. X-Men Spider-Man is what made me such a fan of Marvel as a younger person reading comic books. And this always, you know, caught the spirit of the X-Men and only in the way only a couple of the movies really have.
Correct,
so
yeah.
I think like this is exciting. I love the trailer. That one image of Gambit riding Wolverine basically,
yeah,
and electrocuting his blades or whatever or charging up his blades. That's the kind of like geek heaven I feel like you and I probably both, you know, felt when we were like little kids playing with like the Secret Wars action figures or the Star Wars figures. And so it feels like a great way to bring X-Men up to 2024 while still going back to what made X-Men always so special. And I love that Cyclops, by the way, as he's up on the screen, is front and center. He's always a character. I personally had leaned more towards Cyclops and Wolverine as a reader of the comic, and they've never given him much, you know, attention in the films.
No. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, Cyclops gets a really bad rep for a number of reasons. You know, the number one being, of course, we're talking about in the comic books, basically the minute his wife gives birth, he skips out on the team and goes and hangs out with his ex-girlfriend who is returned from the dead. And as it turns out, his actual wife is a clone of her. So yeah, look, the Cyclops arc is not the strongest. There's some weak moments in time there.
Questionable choices, questionable lifestyle choices.
Definitely some questionable choices. I agree with that. But the visuals are great. You know, I had the same reaction you did, Eric, to there's that image that seems like something that, like you're saying, we would have come up with as kids. You know, the idea of like, well, what if, stay with me here, what if Gambit like charged up Wolverine's claws? I think it would go something like this. And yeah, I mean, I'm like, I don't know if they've done that in the comics. It's been a long time since I read every month.
Right, right. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, is this something we've seen? And
but I want to see it either way. Yeah, exactly.
I want to see it every week of my life, to be honest. Like, it's and also just the idea of riding Wolverine. Like,
yeah,
like right, he's your Tauntaun, basically.
Yeah, I know. It's it is quite the visual. I do believe he's right behind him, but it does look like he's riding him. It's
let me have that. He's riding him.
He is. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a reverse of the old fastball special that you tend to have seen in the X-Men comics. And yeah. You know, they did a tremendous job with, you know, just showing us images of the show. And that the teaser trailer, which our audience can kind of see behind me a little bit, which is the recreation, the facsimile of VHS cassettes, all spelling out 97, which is a tremendous way to do it. And for people who heard the trailer, obviously we just showed it behind us. You know that you can hear familiar voices. The number one being Cal Dodd as Wolverine. I think that that would be the toughest pill to swallow, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are other returning voices. Lenore Zann as Rogue, who was a politician up in Canada at one point. I don't know if she still is, but it's a lot of familiar voices. And you know, the in terms of Beau DeMeo as a head writer. He was involved in the original series, from my understanding. And I know someone really well who worked on this, and he's very proud of the fact that it's coming out now. He's worked on it for 3 years. I have to find out if he's allowed to talk to us on the show. And if he's not, I'm going to go have a great lunch with him and not tell any of you about it because of NDAs that he signs. But
we'll blur the face, and then I could do a Miss Piggy imitation for the voice if need be.
Right, exactly. For people who were fans of our various AfterBuzz TV X-Men shows, our AfterBuzz TV Star Trek shows, you know, he's posted on social media, so I'm not really outing him at this point. But my buddy Frank Moran has been working on this for quite some time. And, you know, he told me about it when he was allowed to. And I would occasionally ask him things. I'm like, so is it going to be called X-Men 97? He's like, I don't even know. You know, it's like he couldn't really say anything about it, but very excited and hoping to get a chance to chat with him. But we're getting a premiere date. That's the big news, is that the premiere date will actually be March 20th. So a little bit more than a month from right now, Eric. I do kind of like the sort of drive-by release dates. You know, they're like, oh, and by the way, that thing, it's actually happening really soon. I'm like, oh, great. You know, because we do this show, and boy, have I been struggling to figure out what we're going to talk about on the show a few times, you know? So the fact that we are going to get there before we know it, we're going to have something to talk about in March. Very excited. Let us know in the chat your excitement level for X-Men 97. Our buddy Daniel Drew is working, so he just popped
That's
in.
That's not an excuse. And
I know. Where are his priorities?
I'm teaching right now. Yeah. I'm here. So, I mean, come on, Daniel.
Yeah, exactly. They're learning so much from you right now. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Excited for March 20th. And then we'll go with the more recent news.
One thing I was just going to add real
quick. Yes, please.
So, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about the Spider-Man cartoon that's going to come out. And it's, you know, I think we all were sort of like, it should be fine. But this doesn't feel like just trying to kind of hedge their bets. You know, like Spider-Man cartoon is like a safe bet. This actually, to their credit, the fact that they're trying to recapture the spirit of the original 90s cartoon, which I think kind of really exciting when you see this definitely in the trailer, like this thing looks like it could have come out in the 90s. And I think that's a pretty, pretty big swing. That's a bold choice. And so I think there is a real sense of excitement. And I think this is also going to potentially find younger fans who maybe now will revisit some of this great 2D animation that, you know, we either grew up with or watched when we were like, you know, a little bit older, like even Batman to go over to DC. So yeah, I think like there's nothing here that feels like it's like watered down or, you know, just sort of giving us, well, this is in some ways maybe a little easier than putting a big risk on a massive new X-Men franchise. I think this is actually it's pretty bold.
Yeah, I mean, and let's remember it's all said and done. The fact that it was very sophisticated storytelling for Saturday morning. You know, it was serialized. It was a large regular cast, a lot of guest characters, and never forget that in the 2-part pilot episode, they kill off one of the X-Men. They kill off Morph like almost instantly. So, you know, it's it'll definitely be interesting to see where we're at in 2024 in terms of the sensibility and the storytelling. And as we said, it can only come too soon. It'll be here before we know it. Yesterday we got the big announcement of the Fantastic Four casting, and Eric and I were talking about it a little bit yesterday, and you know, I think that I think we all had the sense that they had known this for kind of a while, you know, that the and we did talk about sort of the possible accidental leak that Pedro Pascal was working on this. You know, there was I don't know, something that was like the SAG website, and I'm like, I don't know what that means, but somebody somewhere knew that this was happening and maybe opened their mouth. But let's take a moment and talk a little bit about it. Let's start with our Mr. Fantastic, Pedro Pascal, who is certainly he's a man very much of the moment. Wouldn't you agree, Eric?
Yeah, no, I think you can't get much hot. If you're striking while the iron's hot, you can't get much hotter than what his career has been over the last like few years. So one headline I saw that I think is actually kind of smart is, you know, basically, is he taking over the mantle for Robert Downey?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know what, if you're spoiler alert, Madam Web didn't sell many tickets.
Jumping ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal, I think is, I could see them building a new wave of property around him, you know, as a fulcrum, because he's such a wonderful actor. And he also has a really unique energy. Like, he is different than, like, he's not the guy you think, oh yeah, nonstop quips. That's not a term Pedro Pascal has had thrown at him. He's a terrific actor. And I mean, really, his work in The Mandalorian also shows how good he is just with his voice. The idea that he could be behind a mask for 90% of the show and still have such a presence. So it feels like there's a technical level to his acting, too. The kind of skill that, you know, having vocal control, being able to act amidst the world of green screens and not get lost in the shuffle. So I mean, I'm thrilled with all four of these choices. I did think Jodie, is it Comer, the one from Killing Eve? I thought she was potentially going to be Sue Storm, but I've got no issues with where they've landed.
I'm not going to lie, I'm not that familiar with Vanessa Kirby. Do you have something off the top of your head where I should know her from?
She was in the recent Mission Impossibles, pretty awesome like sort of role as like a villainess, but she's
I know the character you mean, because remember we saw that movie together because we go on a lot of movie dates,
and man we'll time about. Is special between us indeed.
That's right.
But yeah, she's great actress.
Yeah, and let's see, we've got Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm. You reminded me that I knew Vanessa Kirby. Can you do the same with Joseph Quinn? Or
yes, it can. Stranger Things. Things season 4 is Eddie Munson.
Yeah, I'm knee deep in the middle of season 2 of Stranger Things. One day I'll pick it back up.
He was a bit of a breakout star from this last season. I don't want to ruin too much for you, but he was.
Yeah.
They've even made action figures of his character.
Nice.
And he looks totally different. He had long hair. I had no idea he was British, but that makes me respect him even more.
So many of our superheroes end up having to be British.
I agree with Jonathan's casting, by the way.
What's that?
Jonathan London is casting suggestions, which I'm completely behind.
Oh, okay. I did not see that. He wants Eric to play Curb E and Platt is Eddie Lombardi. Oh my God. If I, you know, and by the way, Stan had a cameo in it was the second of the previous, the Jessica Alba Fantastic Four movies. If I could pick up the mantle and put on the old USPS suit, I would be honored to take that up. And so then I do recognize his face, the gentleman on the end, but boy, that name doesn't roll off the tongue. Ebon Moss Bacharach.
Not so much, but he compensates in his ability. He is awesome on the bear. Ironically,
he is the bear in the sense he's the main character on that show, right?
He's not the main character,
okay.
You could say his arc in season two, especially, was almost like the emotional centerpiece.
And I wasn't going to correct Jonathan that it was Willie Lumpkin. I knew better, but I'm glad he self-corrected.
It's Jonathan's site. You know, we respect the boss.
He's on the bear. Okay.
Yeah, and he won an Emmy for season one, which I actually have this theory that he is so great in season two. It's very good in season one. Season two was the season that his character really just developed so beautifully. And I wonder if the Emmy voters didn't realize, because the Emmys got pushed back so far, that they were actually voting for season one, not season two. Either way, I'm glad this guy's got an Emmy on his mantle. He deserves it. He's and him as Ben, I think, will be great, because he also has shown in The Bear he can play a badass really well. Right. So
And of course, I do recognize him from Andor. You know, I mean, he wasn't a major character in there, but I believe he was in the prison there. So that'll be great. There's definitely speculation based on, you know, some of the images that we've seen in terms of just when this is going to be set. There's sort of a hopeful energy out there that people want it to be set like in the 60s, sort of the original time. But some of the artwork, I think people are feeling like it looks like it could be the 80s. I think that it's going to be told in a way that it's, you know, it's sort of like they did with Captain Marvel, where it's like, oh, this is the 90s. And we kind of didn't tell you about this. Obviously, this could be somewhere else in the multiverse. I'm not really sure what we're going to get in regards to that, but it is exciting. It seems like they have had their cast for a while, and they just wanted to be like, all right, let's get it out there. Mm-hmm. The Pedro Pascal as Reed, I think, was one of those worst kept secrets. And, you know, I was messaging with a friend earlier today who isn't crazy about the casting, but he didn't really have an alternative. You know, I mean, we heard John Krasinski. He even had the cameo in Multiverse of Madness. And I mean, I think he's great. He didn't feel like Reed Richards. I think that they must feel that, one, Pedro Pascal is great, but two, they must feel like he's the best person to bring to life their vision for Reed Richards. You know, whatever story they want to tell, they feel like he's the guy. And, you know, it's not a cast photo from the most recent Fantastic Four with Miles Teller and Kate Mara. So obviously we're much more excited. I know we try not to talk about that movie here very much, but sometimes.
Except for my pitch for Fantastic Five featuring She-Hulk and the four of them. Which, thankfully, Kevin Feige didn't return my
No, he did. He doesn't usually return your calls. So it was kind of an aside. And we would have mentioned it very quickly at the top of the show if it was the only thing that happened. But there was sort of these comments that were made that there will be a live action Miles Morales Spider-Man movie after Spider-Man 4, the next one with Tom Holland, and after they tie up the Spider-Verse animated universe. So it's one of those like, oh, yeah, we want to do that, but we're just telling you right now. And the same friend I referenced earlier was wondering why all this, why so much news kind of came out in the last week. And I'm like, even though it's a Sony movie, I think Marvel doesn't want the narrative to be Madam Web. I just feel like they're like, look at all this other really cool stuff. You know, the fact that the X-Men 97 trailer didn't come out sooner might be like, let's go ahead and save it for that long President's Day weekend. But, you know, look, I don't know the Miles Morales character very well. I'm an old guy who read old comics where Miles Morales wasn't Spider-Man. I I don't even know much about Ben Reilly being Spider-Man. So I love him in the Spider-Verse movies. I think he's a great character, and getting to explore him live action will be great. And, you know, he is one of the three Spidey and his amazing friends that my daughter watches. So that's probably the most of where I see Miles. But I don't know. It seems like a no-brainer that at some point, because they're not saying we're going to stop telling Peter Parker stories. I think that would be a mistake. I think it's just in addition to Peter Parker stories, we're also going to tell Miles Morales stories, which the Spider-Verse proved. There are plenty of Spideys out there, right, Eric?
Infinite amount of Spideys. Yeah. And the only concern, honestly, I think I might have, weirdly enough, for Miles Morales live action is he's been so wonderfully, you know, represented by the animated movies. It's actually going to be kind of hard to follow that up, and and even not necessarily to better it, but at least to match it. I don't know how old that actor is going to be, but my guess is he's going to not be, he's going to be too old to play the live action version. And so, you know, finding someone who's got that charm and, you know, is as just immensely likable as the Miles Morales we've had in the Spider-Verse, it's going to be pretty tall order. I'm thrilled they're doing it. But they've now, like, the bar is so high that has already been set for Miles before even page one of the screenplay. So I just hope I hope they do him justice, is I guess how I'd put it.
Yeah, no, I hope so, and I do believe they will. I do want to circle back because, you know, if the big boss man's in the chat, we want to acknowledge. He said that I thought it was stated that the Fantastic Four movie would be 1963. Now, what I saw was that it was speculated that it would be in 1963 based on this image where we see Ben holding a Life magazine, and you know, the detective work of the internet showed that it's from like December 1963, and the expectation is that it takes place in the 60s, and you know, we have the astronaut there. I don't know. I had somebody say to me that they thought it was going to be in the 80s, but maybe that was a mistake on their part, and that's also possibly my mistake in believing everything that everyone tells me. I am a bit of a sucker, as Eric will tell you. So
he's not lying. And I actually think taking some of these stories to other time periods, it's funny because I know we'll get over to Madame Web, but Madame Web 2003, it's like, oh, okay.
I mean, sure. I remember
it's period-ish, I suppose. But, you know, there is something to be said for, like, Marvel does expand back for decades and decades. Like, why not take advantage of some of those stories that are really era specific. So I wouldn't be opposed to seeing a 1960 set Marvel film. I thoroughly enjoyed the first Captain America, largely because of its period. So
It's been a minute since I've seen it, but I still contend that that's my favorite MCU movie, is the first Captain America. I just think it works as a standalone movie. And then also as part of, you know, the bigger universe. Now, obviously, we welcome comments, feedback, speculation on all of those big stories that have now taken up, you know, the first 23 minutes of the show. And it's kind of a welcome respite from what we're about to talk about. Now, Eric, you did prepare something special.
I did.
Do you want me to start with that, or should we talk about it? And I have a follow-up question for you about what you prepared. Should we talk about it first?
I think it might be a nice way to kind of ease us into where we're about to go.
Okay. And
where we're going, it's a little dark. I mean, we're going to take it easy.
We're going to get tangled into Cassandra Webb's web, and we're walking in spider webs before we do that.
Yeah.
We are walking. Yeah. Leave a message and I'll call you back.
I'll call you back.
Now, I know you used music in this. Did you use generic library music, or do I need to?
No. I take care of my kids. All right. I this is license free. We're fine. I didn't put my Little Herd romantic single I released back in 98. So no, we're good.
Yeah. You're a regular David Brent putting out your own singles. Easy for me to say. All right. So I'm going to play it off of the YouTube link that you sent to me. And I do hope that everyone is able to enjoy this. And I just basically set it up so that I could play the, you know, make sure that it was able to play. So I have not heard it yet. So I just knew by from the 2 seconds that there was music. So let's see what we got here. And that was only yesterday. Oh, and you brought tea cakes. That was delightful. Yeah. We took a picture with Batman. How fun was that?
We did.
And
all our new friends we made in the theater.
The theater was not more full than that. There I am taking in the great Nicole Kidman. All right, a tomato meter's at 14%. That's a little bit unfair.
This man removed from Adam Webb
screening for Masturbating to Sydney Sweeney. That wasn't us. That was a different screening of it.
That might have been a different variant of Christian. We can't say. Yeah. But happy Valentine's Day to all our viewers, all our listeners, and especially to the Madam Web of my heart, Christian Blatt.
Thank you. Very nice. I want to go back to the where did you do this? You maniac. There was a Valentine that you did, but I didn't pause it in time.
Yeah, it's right.
It's okay. I'll get to it. No, I'll get to it. So basically tell us what it says. It's Cassandra in an outfit she wears at no time in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's a line that we would have been much richer to hear. Let's go on a date in the Amazon where my mom was researching spiders right before she died. To Christian from Eric.
I do love that. And that's some very nice work. I appreciate you taking the time to do that. I had to play it off YouTube. I didn't quite have the amount of time to download it. But I love that. And yes, as I did spoil a little bit earlier, the fact that, you know, you saw, if for those of you who are watching, you saw that video and you know that we have an empty theater behind us. And I just want to share the visual representation that it wasn't much more full than that. This was like a week out. I bought a ticket. I bought my ticket first as literally the one seat in the middle.
And then Christian sent me that. And I'm like, which one is you?
That's true. You did say that. And so that was, that was at that point. And I was curious. I wanted to see, you know, how business was possibly booming. You know, once we were actually at the big release date, you know, I wanted to get an idea of like, you know, before we actually went to the movie, I was like, all right, well, I mean, there have to be more people seeing this movie now, right? And to be fair, I'm right. There's more than just the two of us, although it looked like it was only the two of us, until like the day before. And then as I commented to Eric when we sat down to watch this movie, that, you know, I went to this same AMC when they reopened in the summer of 2021 after being closed for the pandemic. And the spacing yesterday was much more severe than it was when they reopened after a global pandemic. It was a little sparse. Is that fair to say?
I mean, sometimes you go to the movies because you want to be alone. And this was one of those times. Felt much peace and solitude there amidst the six others in a theater that could sit several hundred.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And Jonathan's Strange said that they were lost. Time and Negative Zone acts differently. We're going to see what happens. I can't wait to see that story. And William Walton wanted to know, where's the Peter Parked Car Spider-Man film? It's coming. Look, after this movie, I think Peter Parker should definitely be coming.
I think Sony right now, everything's on the table for any spider relevant property. I mean, including Spider Rico from Rocky and Spider from Goodfellas.
I thought you were talking about Spider Uncle Rico, and I was very confused as to what that was, but that seems like something entirely different. But Spider Rico. So look, I think that there was definitely a bit of a marketing issue. Sometimes weird, ironic things can work in your favor. They had this interaction. I actually don't know who the reporter was, what outlet he was with, but he got to speak to Dakota Johnson. And there was a lot of heat off of this clip, let's just say, and I want everybody to take a look at
three Spider-Man Tom Holland movies.
Yeah.
Should I just
that part's a good answer.
Yeah. Oh. Spider-Man Here he comes.
Here he comes. Yes,
that's number one.
Yep.
Spider-Man, and he's back. And the other one, the last one is the Goblet of Spider-Man.
Oh, God.
Need a vacation.
Harry, Spider-Man, and the Goblet of Man.
Now, if I were editing that, I would have just gone right to her answer, Harry Goblet and the Spider of Man. It was kind of a funny answer, but yeah, there was the impression of like, okay, so this lady does not know that much about universe that she's.
I'm actually worried she got some kind of lasting effects from concussion syndrome due to her work in 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes,
I think maybe he hit her a little too hard. Or something.
That might have been the case. So, interestingly enough, there's one that you sent me, which we'll get to in a moment. But there was some marketing that also, for whatever reason, featured present day Raven Simone, and I want everybody to check this out.
Hi, John from the Madam Web Marketing team. And yes, I would love to make a video for you.
Whoa. How did you know I was calling you to ask you that?
Because I can gaze into the future.
Oh, I mean, who wouldn't buy a ticket for that movie after that?
Well, I mean, Raven Simone, a wonderful performer, and she's never been more popular than right now. So, I mean,
yeah,
I can totally see why you need her.
I believe what you're talking about is that there's definitely some Raven Simone. But didn't mean to jump right into it. That's my mistake. But there is definitely heat from Sydney Sweeney, and you sent this one to me. And this we'll talk a lot about this clip. But
yeah, you might want to turn off the sound if you can when you're playing it, because I mean I don't know what the sounds there.
Well, I don't think that there's music. I think it's okay. Well, if it's not,
there's a little bit of music in it. You'll hear.
Okay, I think it's all right.
I know Taekwondo. What?
Madam Web. So we see her in the Julia Carpenter costume. We see her shooting electricity. We see her kicking. And
lies.
I'm going to spoil this right now.
Lies.
The amount of time you see that in that commercial is exactly how much time in the movie she's dressed like that and does those things.
And listen, I mean, okay, Sydney Sweeney dressed like this in this kind of an outfit. I mean, I understand. If sure. you even have one frame of that in your movie, right now, you're going to put that on the poster. That's going to be the entire yeah. marketing if you have her in that outfit, which they did. Yes. But the joke is, you're right. If you saw that in no other marketing, your thought is she is Madam Web.
Yeah.
She is not Madam Web. Nowhere close to Madam Web. She is a high school character who is supposed to be the naive innocent, and yet they put her in a skirt so short that yeah. One thought I was like, oh, is a Catholic school often? But you guys know it's not actually.
No, it's definitely not. Yeah,
yeah. As Brittany, of course, once said, not that innocent, and also she said toxic.
She did say toxic, which, you know,
might be the only good scene.
I mean, is it a good scene? It's like, it's a scene that definitely catches your attention. There's a dancing scene. There's a scene where they're dancing on tables to Toxic by Britney Spears, because remember, it's 2003. And we'll talk about reasons why that is the case. I think I've got theories. There's theories galore, really, as to why that might be the case. But I don't know. I mean, it's like, I think that they were just like, they said to the marketing team, like, whatever you can do. And like, somebody's like, oh, I'm friends with Raven Simone. They're like, great. Why don't you just go ahead and see if we might be able to, you know, get her to do something, anything. It's like, yeah, she'll probably do it for free. All right, great. Now then run with it.
But we got our pick of the litter. We got Raven. We got Kirk Cameron. We got Alan or Robin Thicke. I mean, our choices are endless for marketing.
Alan's passed on, but I think that Kirk Cameron could sell it to a very specific demographic. So if you could get Kirk Cameron and Raven Simone, that might be the way to go. And, you know, look, we did not a whole show, but we really spent time looking at this trailer for Madam Web. You know, we spent a good chunk of a show actually just, you know, watching it and reacting to it. And as you recall, we were not impressed. And, you know, some of the scenes that people are seeing now are in that diner scene, which, you know, is the best sequence, even though some of it actually doesn't happen in the narrative of the story. You know, some of it is flashes of things that Cassandra sees. But it's, well, I'm going to go first and try to describe this movie. And, you know, you and I were talking afterwards, and I'm just going to have to put it this way. And you know, I'm trying to tell people no spoilers. I'm trying to not talk about the movie in strong terms. Now's the point where we kind of have to get into what it is about the movie. And in no uncertain terms, I just want to say that this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. And I think if you've seen me comment on some of this stuff over the years, you'll know that I actually felt, I messaged a friend of ours. I said, this movie would have been so much better if Carnage had shown up in Act Three. And I stand by that, Eric.
Oh, sure.
The Venom movies are better than this. You know, we'll talk about it, but Venom is better than this. Venom 2 is better than this. Morbius is better than this. And even something that we recently watched together for the first time, Elektra, is better than this. And the reason why those movies are better is that those movies have a lead who is compelling to watch even when the material's not great. You know, Jared Leto is worth watching in a bad movie like Morbius because he is very good, you know, and I think Jennifer Garner is very compelling to watch. And I don't know what Venom 2 was all about, but I do like Woody Harrelson and, you know, Tom Hardy's great. This didn't have that, you know what I mean? Dakota Johnson just does not have a compelling presence, and you don't feel like she's a particularly capable actress. And when I'm being mean, as I said to you beforehand, she is the third most talented actor growing up in her household. And I say that to be mean, but I also say that to spout facts and share them with you, the audience. I think it's important. There were moments where we could not respect the adage of seeing a movie in a theater. That adage, of course, being shh. There were a couple times where we had to say something to each other. There was laughing and when things weren't funny. And there's a couple times where things were supposed to be funny and there wasn't really laughing.
Each of us took turns, I think, like losing our mind at some point. Weirdly enough, never the same moment, though.
Never the same time.
There wasn't one specific moment that both of us, it just turned us brain dead. But the fact that we had this conversation as we walked out, is this movie worse or better than Superman 4? That to me says it all.
That says it all. And I'll just explain that the decision that it is better than Superman 4 is better than
this. Because, right.
Yeah, Superman 4 is better. And it was at one point I considered to be one of the worst comic book movies I'd ever seen. Maybe even the at one point. I said this is better. That this is not as good as Batman and Robin, the George Clooney Batman. This is worse than Superman 4 because Superman 4 had one important thing, which is Christopher Reeve. Number two, it had Gene Hackman. And number three, it had John Cryer as his nephew. I kind of love John Cryer, especially this era of John Cryer, you know, like 87, because you and I were talking about a movie he did called Hiding Out, where he's like a
great film.
He's like a Wall Street broker who pretends to be in high school. And Superman 4 is far and away superior to this. And now I'll let you get back to your thoughts, sir.
This was a question Alex, my son, who has made occasional appearances on this show.
Correct.
You know, he asked me, is this the worst superhero movie you've ever seen? And I told him, I don't know if it is, but I'm having a hard time thinking of a worse one. And I was I wanted to bring that to you. Can you think of a worse
movie? The Roger Corman Fantastic Four is better than this. I contend that at this moment, the Roger Corman Fantastic Four is the best Fantastic Four movie we've ever seen. Craig Robinson. Worse than Thor: The Dark World. Absolutely. 100%. if there are only two films ever made, Thor the Dark World and Madam Web, Thor the Dark World is Citizen Kane. Okay. Thor the Dark World is much better. Thor the Dark World has a great cast. That's already, a starting point. Craig also had some thoughts. Sounds like they're spinning a web of lies. They've been stringing us all along. They're definitely trying to string you all the way into the movie theater. That's where they're casting their web to, is right there. So, but it's hard to think of one that's worse, because we just went through some of the worst. I would have to, and I couldn't put myself through this again, but the 2015 Fantastic Four, that might be worse than this. But
you could make that argument easily.
You could make that argument, but I'm also not going to go out on a limb and say for certain it's worse than this. It's just, okay, it might be. That movie
sounds like a future, by the way, sounds like a future episode. I think we might have to do a deep dive for the sake of all of you, not for ourselves, because no, we want to protect you. I told one of my friends, I saw Madam Web, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
So in essence, like that, I mean, the fact that you could put those movies side by side, and there is talent, and there's a fair amount of talent in the Fantastic Four movie they ruined, which might give it the edge, because you do have some really legitimate actors floating around in that mix who worse.
Yeah,
which give it the advantage.
I've enjoyed Miles Teller and other things.
Yeah,
Kate Mara, I'm not a huge fan of Kate Mara. I think my favorite performance was when Kevin Spacey pushed her onto the train tracks. But in general, she can be at least okay in movies, Kate Mara. And yes, Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm. That's not the casting I would have gone with, but he's tremendous. He's phenomenal. So you know what? I'm going to say it right now. Madam Web is worse than that Fantastic Four movie.
Wow. All right.
Because because of who's in it. It's already better. It has to be. But I am not saying that that's a good movie. And I'm not saying that this is a good movie. I'm trying to tell people, I'm singing it from the town square, this might be the worst movie I've ever seen in the theater. I was telling you, I hated the Harry Styles movie, Don't Worry, Darling. Harry Styles, Florence Pugh. This is worse than that. And I know some people liked it. I don't understand how. I may have lost a friend or two by saying that only stupid people like that movie, but kind of stand by that. And then if anybody sees this and thinks it's great, let me know. Our buddy Daniel.
Don't let us know. If you see it and you like it, please drive yourself to the nearest, not urgent care, emergency room.
Emergency
something room. Happened to that's you and we, terrible, and we care about you. We want you to be okay. But and by the way, the acting here, I'm sorry, you were about to go on.
No, I was just gonna say, our buddy Daniel Drew, who tries to see the positive in everything.
Yes.
He posted a message, which I'll look for. He posted a review on his website. And, you know, he's trying to be like, well, you know, it's not the worst I've ever seen. And I'm like, well, okay, I could argue that. But also I could understand if somebody says it's not the worst I've ever seen. But what was the point you wanted to make, Eric?
Oh, I was actually going to swing back to the acting.
Was that a web pun?
It's slight. It wasn't intentional, but I'll take it.
Oh,
if it worked.
Okay.
If not, it was not.
That's fine.
So Dakota Johnson, it's funny. She had Lost Daughter, which was a pretty good film from a year or two ago. She's actually really interesting in that film, but I think she's the kind of actor that you need a director who really knows how to use her skills. And I'm not just, I mean, again, she's of course attractive, but just what she brings. And in that one, she was kind of like, she didn't say much. She was sort of mysterious. You didn't quite know what made her tick. And actually that worked really well in that film. And for her as a performer, putting her front and center here. And I did not make it through very much of 50 Shades of Grey. Don't read into that.
How many shades did you get through?
I got to burgundy and then I stopped.
I didn't even make it over
to the gray side of the family.
That is not close.
She's not great in that. She's as a lead terrible, but also how much of it's her fault, how much of script fault. She's supposed to be an EMT. She's supposed to be like the queen driving those ambulances safely in the mean streets of Queens and the Bronx. And that's not an easy gig, but she also gets a gift from the child of one of the patients she saved, And this kid, it's just gone through the trauma of seeing his mom almost die, and correct, gives yes, a little drawing to her, and her response. And I get the idea. You always say this in writing. You start them here to bring them over here. So she's childless. She doesn't know how to deal with children. She lost her mom in the womb, when she was in the womb. The mom died. So she's gone through all this trauma. So we get it. Yeah, she has a hard time with family and with loved ones, and she's a little bit cold around the heart. But this poor child just went through such hell, and he gives her a terrible drawing, which I would have critiqued him on, despite his trauma, about, oh, thank you for saving my mom. And her response is, what am I supposed to do with this draw? And it's like, yeah, what is happening in this film? Was this? I'm convinced they shot the rehearsals for half this movie, including the action scenes. But her acting in particular, she must not have known that was a take, because that's the only explanation for why she would do what she did in front of the lens.
Let me be devil's advocate for a moment.
Please, advocate
these
away.
These are all the best takes, and this is what they could put
out. My mind can't handle that idea.
By the way, Craig Robinson says, Eric, your sacrifice means everything, seeing this movie so we don't have to. And William Walton, we should just go ahead and give Madam Web all the Oscars right now. There is an award that I do believe.
The Razzies
will get it. They don't do it anymore?
No. I'm saying the Razzies are there. Is Madam Web to lose?
It's a clean sweep for Madam Web.
It's February 15th. And we're already saying it here and now. Yeah. Madam Web will sweep at the Razzies, deservedly.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we get into some of the specifics, I do want to talk about what our buddy Daniel Drew says, because he's always very thoughtful. And, look, in some ways, I am kind of like this. I do try. I always try to find something that I can like about everything. I like movies that people don't, especially when they're parts of universes that maybe I'm predisposed to enjoy. So our buddy Daniel Drew, on his website, I'm going to give him a plug, thephantomblender.com. Which the Phantom Bender. So I guess that's not the same thing. I don't have my glasses on. So I guess Bender from Futurama, which I love that idea. Yeah. And he says something that right away that this is the reason I wanted to bring it up. And Daniel says, well, it was better than Venom 2. And right away, I have to stop, Daniel. Is it really better than Venom 2? Now, maybe he feels that way. It wasn't an altogether bad movie. Again, I disagree. It wasn't amazing, but I've seen worse. Name five.
Name two.
Yeah, two is fine. He thinks that the cast did a good job. And I think that might be where we could agree to disagree. I will say that Celeste O'Connor, who plays Maddie, I think she's actually very well cast. I understand she's going to be in the next Ghostbusters movie. I think she was also in the previous one. But I saw her, Zach Braff put out a movie last year called A Good Person. It is rough. It is not a fun movie. Florence Pugh's in it. Yeah. Morgan Freeman's in it. Molly Shannon. Great performances. Really well-made movie. It is a tough one to get through for a number of reasons. But Celeste O'Connor's in there. And I think that she was good in this. She's the character where I'm like, yeah, I would see more. I kind of want to see that. I don't believe that the Madam Web multiverse is being built around this. Maybe somebody thought that at one point, but I don't think we're going to ever. Do you think I'm going out on a limb to say I don't think we'll ever see any of these characters in a movie again, Eric?
Nah, it's not even hanging on by a thread at this point. That ship was sunk even before the reviews came out. Box office, this one's going to be behind the Bob Marley movie. It's not going to do well.
Yeah.
But even before that, I think they knew that this is part of the spider approach with Sony. It's just like, all right, let's pull out every character we can and see which one clicks. And so far, the only one that has really is Venom. So,
yes.
And you know, I think Venom we have Venom 3.
Later this year, until Craven is going to prove everybody wrong and is going to be the best movie of 2024. You'll see. We'll be talking about it on this show. Look, when Madam Web didn't have one of those press screenings I like to brag about going to, it was an indication that there might be trouble. That's because I will tell you, there was a press screening for Morbius. They had an expectation of Morbius heading into it. They knew kind of what it was, and they decided to roll the dice and let people like me see it. And I did my best to find the things that I like. It was more, it was a lot of stuff like, oh, I like Matt Smith, you know, not in this, but I do like him in general. It was great to see the Doctor be a bad guy, you know, that sort of a thing. This didn't have any of that. And I highlight Celeste O'Connor because it's kind of the one thing. I don't watch Euphoria, so I don't know Sydney Sweeney. And I think that they have her sort of play this glasses, very timid character, because there would at some point be a reveal for her to actually be this badass superhero. I do love that black costume Spider-Woman character who was also introduced in Secret Wars at the same time that the Spider-Man black suit that you were holding up earlier. So I like that iteration of Spider-Woman. I could be on board for that character. And what we're seeing is like, I mean, it's not even a first draft of the character. It's like the ingredients were mixed, but they never even put her into the oven. So we're not going to get to see a fully baked Sydney Sweeney character. You know what
not
I mean?
At all.
We're just not going to get to see it. Yeah.
I'm going to take that metaphor even one step further. It's the mac and cheese that's still in the box. Like nothing has been opened. And I think what you hinted at before with talking about, like, they're trying to market this thing, especially because Sydney Sweeney right now is having a moment. She did that romantic comedy that actually made money, which romantic comedies don't do anymore. Yet this one did. I have seen Euphoria, which means I've seen a lot of Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, you've seen a lot of her. Oh, okay. I see
100% of her.
Oh, all right.
Including, I think, one or two of her internal organs. Like, she's very free in that role. Oh. And she's good in that. I don't know how great an actress she is, although I think she's fine in this. Actually, I would say all three of the girls, although you and I both agreed that Celeste O'Connor was head and shoulders.
She stood out. Yeah. From the time that she like flips over the ambulance and flips off the ambulance, you definitely noticed her. We had, no, maybe at that point we hadn't, but you see Sydney Sweeney in sort of a very inexplicable moment where she's in the sort of the recovery room at the hospital because the little girl who gave Cassandra the drawing was Sydney Sweeney's Julia's stepsister. And I'm like, oh man, they're really trying to put them all together in the same place, you know?
And it felt like a stretch. And the thing is too, you know, before you're saying like spoilers, I would say there's almost nothing to spoil here.
No. Right? The spoilers didn't make it. The spoilers didn't make it on the screen. There are implied spoilers, which we'll now talk about. And I'm not even putting a spoiler alert up on the screen. I can't do it. I can't justify it.
But there's nothing to spoil.
There's nothing to actually spoil. Daniel Drew is now with us. I'm done with Chess Club. The first graders weren't that bad. My son's in fourth grade, and he's having fun with Chess Club. So,
wait, did Daniel take on the first graders? Was it like inverse?
It was all the first graders versus Daniel, and Daniel beat them. No, I believe he teaches chess to a group of kids. Some kind of after school program, which sounds great. I fully applaud people who are trying to pass any kind of knowledge to kids like mine, who. You know, they say, I want to play chess. And I'm like, what's that? You know? So,
my son plays chess. He goes, when am I going to play you? I'm like, and then I just run away.
somebody in the chat whose username I'm going to have to disagree with, CowboysFan92. However, the sentiment, man, that film was terrible. And yes, that is, CowboysFan92, Eric and I might not agree with you on a lot of things. We are going to agree. Daniel, you might need to back up the part where I said that this might be the worst movie I've ever seen. I did read a little bit. Daniel, we were actually reading some of your blog. I misidentified it. What did I call it? I called
the blender, the Phantom Blender.
The Phantom Blender. We're kind of talking about the cast. The three girls, the three young women, I do think are very good. And those are that they're cast with the idea that one day they would reprise those characters. I mean, that's not going to happen, but I can see how they were cast. It was like, it's about this movie, but it's also more about how we would have seen them again. You know, teaming up against Venom or something, or you know, Kraven hunting them, which basically was the plot of this movie, is that the big bad, who is neither big but pretty bad, is hunting them the way that Kraven hunts people, you know. And it's in 2003, so they're like, oh, I've got all this newfangled facial recognition technology. I'm like, oh, you mean stuff that's like on a website now? You know,
yeah, but the stuff, I mean, the fact is my phone can identify the breed of my dogs, you know,
right.
So
yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
Seeing this, and so since you brought up Tahar Rahim,
yes, allow me to look up his name, yes.
Oh, yeah, I got it right here, Tahar Rahim. Now we can argue about, not even argue, we could pontificate about, sure, whether or not this is the worst Marvel movie. Even maybe is it the worst movie that we've seen in the theater. But I would say I cannot think of a worse villain in any of these superhero movies than this one. Tahar Rahim was so terrible. He plays the same beat the whole movie.
Correct.
He's not, like, his line deliveries makes Dakota Johnson actually, by comparison, seem like Cate Blanchett. And his motive is like, the three of them are going to kill me. And then later on, in case you, I don't know, had to go pee, the three of them are destined to kill me. I have seen it. And then later on, three of them, they will kill me one day. And you realize, like, they never gave a thought to anything about this guy as a character. You know, he's just there to kill. Now, at least with Kraven, we get why Kraven hunts, you know.
Yeah.
This one, we understand he wants them dead because they're going to kill him. But even that, they completely sort of, like, in the end of the film, again, not really a spoiler, it's like, well, his vision didn't come true at all.
Yeah.
Like, his vision was just, it wasn't even just ironically wrong. It was just wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
no, he does get killed by them, but mostly by an EMS driver, you know?
Yeah.
And that's basically what the vision
is. And also Pepsi, which I've been told Pepsi will kill you. But the Pepsi sign is actually his undoing.
Look, clearly, this movie was targeting the Pepsi generation. There's so much Pepsi in this movie.
Oh my God, I forgot to mention, ironically or not. No,
yeah.
I put a so my wife came home, she had an extra can of Pepsi Zero or whatever, Pepsi Max, which I think is a solid beverage for the PepsiCo Foundation, in case you want to sponsor either Geekscape or Blackcast Worldwide. I put it in the freezer just thinking, oh, I'll just let it get cold and I'll have it. And I forgot about it and it exploded. Oh, no. So there, the Pepsi curse has carried over from this film and it has followed me home like Final Destination, the defense rest.
Daniel Drew, who always jumps into the chat with tidbits like this. Funnily enough, Cassandra Webb does get killed eventually by a relative of Kraven. So interesting that Kraven is the next movie. I agree. And look, yeah, Milo from Morbius was also not great. I did some comparison between this movie and Morbius.
Yeah.
All the characters needed character development. I agree with that.
Except for Adam Scott. He was the only character that I think I understood anything about.
I was watching back the trailer. We were watching it before. I didn't know he was in this movie. I really like him, you know? Yeah. Severance was great on Apple Plus. I thought that he was a tremendous addition to Parks and Rec. In general, I like him when I see stuff. He's a hot tub time machine. You know, I always tend to like him. And he does what Adam Scott does in this movie. And there might be some logic flaws. And Daniel's got a lesson for you. Never freeze carbonated drinks.
I knew that.
Craig is asking if he's worse than Lex in Batman vs. Superman. Yeah. You mean Jesse Eisenberg? Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg is way better than anybody in this movie. We're not saying that these things that we're saying are better than this. We're not saying they're good. We're just saying that this is worse. That's all we're trying to teach each and every one of you. I think it's important. Daniel, I agree. I was excited to see the costumes, but I guess we wouldn't get them that much. And he was right. So look,
how much? Well, Christian, how much screen time do you think? So the trio. Oh no, we'll call them the three blind spiders. Like, how much screen time do they actually have in this film? You think all said and done, total
in total screen time?
Total.
Honestly, like if you're counting like just one of them, you know, in moments. You know, this is a 2-hour movie. Maybe half an hour, maybe a little bit more. in costume for each of them, it's about 60 seconds. But
that's, you know, what I was going to say. Exactly. Yeah. 1 minute of them is as actual superheroes.
Yeah.
And that's where the marketing, it's kind of like the recent Mean Girls. They sort of were trying to hide that it's a musical.
Yeah. There's no music in the trailer to Mean Girls. Yeah.
And this one here, they're trying to make it look like it's a band of spider women all working together. Now, I guess if you just go by the letter of that, yes, it is. But when you watch the marketing of this, in fact, you think that it's going to be, again, Sydney Sweeney in a skin tight outfit. Yeah. It's not.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you brought it up because I know we showed this already, but I think it's important for Daniel and people who are joining late.
Yes.
This is part of the marketing of this movie. Three reasons to see Madame Web. One, two, you see her in the costume.
Now. What?
And then again,
God. And it made it look like she's in that last scene. That last scene is the climax.
It's Cassandra. Yeah.
I mean, really, I know people bring up lawsuits all the time and they dox all the time. They strike all the time. But this is one where you really, like, there's creative marketing and there's lying.
And there's lying. Lies, yeah.
Oh my God. They're in it for a minute as these. And even then, by the way, it's not like it's like a cool minute. You know, sometimes that might be enough, like a great little tiny set piece. It's not even that. It's just flashes of a fight that never happens.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing is the images that we're talking about and were used in that very short viral trailer. They're from visions that the bad guy, whose name I've already forgotten, that he has. And it's like it's a future that might happen. He's much older in this future. They're all superheroes at that point. So he has this dream literally every night, he says, and he's able to get a computer rendering of what they look like. And then I don't know who his Chloe from 24 is there. You know, he's got a Mary Jane.
That's David Mamet's daughter.
Right. But I just mean that character, like,
Amaria.
What? But anyway, so it's like, I'll age them down 10 years and see. I'm like, all right, sure. If you guess
Marvel.
So.
Well, I love the marveling at 2003 technology.
Yeah.
With facial recognition software. Like, wow, if you have this, you have control of the whole world. It's like, I mean, that was kind of exciting. I don't know. In Enemy of the People.
Enemy of the state.
And I get it. It's like, well, it's supposed to be 2003, but it's not like a passing joke. It's rather like a scene where they marvel at this as if we as an audience are going to marvel at something we've known about for decades.
Right.
Very curious choices there.
Daniel points out, keeping in mind that there's a Silk series coming, you know, a spinoff of Venom. Maybe they tend to have these three or any one of them show up in the Silk show. Yeah, Silk series. Yeah, I was thinking of movies. But look, I'm not saying that it's impossible that we couldn't see anyone or any of these characters. For Sony's sake, they should hope they have Sydney Sweeney signed to some kind of deal where she can't say no and she has to, you know, play that character in something. But we'll see again, Cowboys fan, there was Dakota Johnson in an interview to Games Radar said this film went through significant rewrites. You think? Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that is insightful. I'm not making fun of the fact. I'm making fun of the fact that, there's two writing teams listed. And one of them, by the way, being
six total writers. Was that
one of them being the writing team who did Morbius, who are past guests on Geekscape. And, you know, I've seen them talk. They're great. Very interesting. You know, it's just they seem to get the assignments of movies that, aren't well received. But, you know, anybody who's written professionally knows that from what you turn into what turns up on the screen, there's a lot of differences, you know. So I think the idea of making a Madame Web movie is probably the mistake to begin with. But doing a Madame Web origin story, you know, if it's a Spider-Man movie where he encounters Madame Web, that could be very interesting, you know. But giving us this story, setting it in 2003 is the part we're going to talk about now. Part of that, I think, is to establish, you know, 20 years later, in modern continuity of these Sony movies, you could have these characters as superheroes, as the visions that we're seeing. Right. So I think that that's a big reason. But the other reason for that, I think it's set 20 years ago, because this film has some absolutely unspoken Easter eggs that you don't have to be particularly comic book literate to pick up on at least one or two of them. And from the moment that you're told that Adam Scott's character's name is Ben Parker, you're like, hey, I know somebody with the last name Parker. Sure, I know who that is. And then maybe you think like, oh, Uncle Ben's an important part of that story. Okay. Oh, well, they're going to a baby shower for his sister. Oh, Mary. Oh, and her husband, Richard, is away on business a lot. Wonder if he works for if he's a spy or something. Well, we don't know that because we don't see it on the screen. And they do play around with a moment where they talk about, by the way, I don't go to a lot of baby showers, but I've never heard of a baby shower. One of the games is guess the baby's name. I don't know anybody who's wanted to tell people the baby name until after the kid's born, you know, but maybe somebody else can give me exceptions to that. But they don't, you know, Cassandra has these moments where she goes through deja vu and she experiences things in sort of a different way as part of the web. So we don't actually hear what the baby's name is, but I think we can assume the baby's name is Peter. I know it sounds crazy. I might be jumping. And at one point, Ben talks about how he's met someone and they're really important. And Cassandra says, what's her name? And he just kind of stares and she's like, oh, it really is serious. So here's what I thought. And I told Eric this. Here's what I thought was going to happen in the post-credit scene of the movie. Was they're in the hospital. Baby Peter's been born. And, Ben was spending a lot of time with his new nephew because his sister needed some help because the baby came early. Richard's off, you know, not fighting crime for the government or whatever Richard Parker does. And I thought that maybe his girlfriend was going to show up at the hospital and it was going to be Marissa Tomei. Maybe they would have like de-aged her so she looked like my cousin Vinny, because it's supposed to be like 20 years ago, although that's 30 years ago. That's not the point. But no, this movie was not interesting enough to even do that. There are no end credit scenes. I should probably you know, warn everyone. But
my hope was actually a little different, which was a baby body, Tom Holland's head on the baby body.
Oh, like those E-Trade babies in the Super Bowl commercials? Yeah, you wanted one of
completely
those.
And in this movie, we would have been like, yeah, why not? Sure.
I'll tell you this, it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the movie.
No. In our theme of this movie is not effective at its goal. S.J. Clarkson, the director of this is something I did a little homework on, because I was, one of the things about this is, you know, we've seen a lot of kind of action scenes that I would describe as just kind of maybe dull, a little lifeless, or generic, I feel like would be the one that usually falls on a lot of these sort of second tier and third tier superhero movies. This was the one, though, where I, you know, was joking before about they thought it was a rehearsal. There's moments in these sort of supposed to be high stakes, high octane action scenes that it looked like the actors were literally like marking it, right? Like when you rehearse, you don't always, it's hard to give 100% in every rehearsal, not to mention safety wise, you sort of make sure you know where you're going, where the camera's going, where the lighting is. So you mark it, you sort of figure it out. There are moments where, like, remember when they're running on the subway and also like, oh, run. And they move at like half speed. Yeah. And I thought that was the surprising thing here. It was done in a way I'm like, okay, maybe this director just finished film school, did one independent feature that went over well, and they give her a Marvel film, which has happened a couple of times. But she's been directing in the TV world for decades, including a show I loved from back in the day, Life on Mars, which is there was a British and an American one.
The American version is one of the worst endings for a show ever, but it was interesting to follow Until I'm told the British version's amazing. Yeah, the very last episode was, as we like to say, garbage. To the technique you're talking about, Daniel Drew's talking about the many shaky camera moments.
Oh, I didn't even mind that. When the camera was still and you would see the movement and like...
Yeah, that was among the least of our problems. I did a quick search of Twitter, which some people, you know, say, hello, X-World. And... so this is somebody named Kyle Arking, and the succinct way I want to give him the credit for saying Madam Web is a wretched experience at the movies, from its nauseating editing to its awful script to some of the worst performances of the year. Sony has delivered a comic book movie that spits in the face of all comic book fans and viewers alike. Talk about wasted potential. I'll disagree on that last part. I don't know how much potential there really was for this. But the wretched experience at the movies, I'm like, yeah, you kind of nail it there, Kyle. I don't disagree in any way, really. And there's two more that I want to share because, usually I will deride the comments on Twitter on movies. But TJ Fincy says, Madam Web was pretty bad, but Dakota Johnson was funny. And there's a whole sequence set to Toxic and some cute found family stuff that doesn't quite land, but I'm a sucker for it. He disagreed with all of that. But the last thing he says is the ADR is so bad, it's funny. And if it hadn't been for that tweet, I wouldn't have remembered to mention. Now, the ADR, for people who don't necessarily know, can be called looping. It's the ADR stands for additional dialogue recording. And there's a number of reasons why. Sometimes, you know, the mic doesn't quite capture it, or you decide you want to give a line a different influence or a different impact. But a lot of times you add some ADR lines to pick up the pace of a script. Something's not answered in what you film. So then it's just like, you know, and bad ADR, you'll notice, where it's like, I'm talking like this, but then I'm also saying something really important and it sounds like this. And then it goes back to sounding like this. So... the ADR, there's a few times where the ADR is like, is this the finished print of this movie? To what you were saying about, did they film the rehearsals? You know, is this, and you're saying it's automated dialogue replacement? I thought it was additional, but all right.
No, but it does that job.
One of us teaches for film school. So I'm going to have to.
I did in a private chat.
No, you did call me out.
No, I get no points.
If you make a mistake, I always call you out.
No, I mean, that's all you do. It's one of my favorite ADR uses ever was in the original Suicide Squad. Yeah. When, in speaking of rewrites, recuts, re-edits, re-everything, that one may be the most extreme, and except for Justice League. And there's a part when they introduce, is it Slipknot? Is that the guy's name?
I
get that in the new metal band confused.
New metal band, yeah.
Or is it Korn? I don't know. And Slipknot shows up and someone's like, oh, that's Slipknot. He can climb anything. You don't see who's saying that. So they realized they didn't have time for his montage. So they just replaced that little bit of exposition with one ADR line said by no one. So you're like, who even said that? Like, I remember seeing that and I laughed out loud, which normally you don't even notice ADR except when it's terrible.
That's when you notice it. Terrible. Yeah. It's like I've talked about.
Editing similar, you know,
usually a score to a movie, you'll notice it if it's exceptional. But other than that, you'll only notice it if it's bad.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about soundtrack using licensed music. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about actual score, instrumental. When it's bad, you're like, oh no. I've had people that want to fight me over the Michael Mann Manhunter movie, with the introduction of Hannibal Lecter with the 80s music in it. I'm like, you're
love
kidding.
It. Oh, you're one of them. I'll fight you.
I would recut that movie with real music and see what it looked like. But I had one more tweet that I wanted to share before we wind down. This is Ben parentheses meter. Madam Web has to be one of the worst comic book movies in recent memory. The actors try their best to save this ugly mess of a movie, but they struggle with what they're giving. Features some terribly edited sequences, a fairly boring story, and lacks any thrills. That's the thing about dealing with Cassandra's like web and connecting. She has a whole conversation with the bad guy in a diner. And I'm not quite sure how that happens because he doesn't show up. And then she prevents those moments from happening. She's in an empty diner. He's somehow also there. And he's dreaming this every night. Every single night he has the same dream. You know, and so I'm not really sure how her abilities work. And she has to go back to Peru to meet the spider people. And that's not a strong sequence in this film. I'm going to have to say.
Even that sentence, you know, sometimes you sort of forget how bad something is when you're watching it. But then when you say it out loud, you realize it's terrible. She has to go back to Peru to meet the spider people.
Yeah.
That's like my Uncle Irving would have described a scene that way. But yet that is dead on. That is exactly what she does.
She had to go back to Peru to meet the spider people.
I'll be back in a week. Yeah. You know, which,
by the way, let's just say she wasn't dressed to go to the jungle.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, wrong. Sorry. I don't want to get in the way of
a Cowboys fan in there.
Oh, I don't want to get in the way of Cowboys fan. Sony
as usual, apart from Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, and Emma Stone. They have cast good leads. I mean, Tom Hardy as Venom is great casting. Even Woody Harrelson as Carnage is good casting. You do have to follow it up with a good script. Yeah,
it helps. What I think also too, what you're talking about is this thing some of us use called logic. And one of the most frustrating things in a film filled with frustrating things is the severe lack of logic that happens with these characters. Like, you want to get behind characters to an extent, especially in a superhero movie. You don't want a Tony Soprano character front and center unless you're doing the Venom movie, I suppose. So you want characters that you can root for and care about. You don't want to see them die. And yet, every step of the way, they found ways to make these characters seem like adults. These three high schoolers, and again, high school doesn't mean dumb. They were told, lay low, and mind you, they almost got murdered. So what happens a few hours after they almost get murdered? They're at a diner dancing on a tabletop for these random high school football players. Now, I have not almost been murdered, thank God, but I imagine hours later, I'm probably still not in the mood to do dances on tabletops.
Well,
I would need at least a day.
By the way, one of the things our buddy Daniel Drew commented on in, I don't know if he posted this or I think this was in his, I think this was in his review. Those girls do walk away from a lit campfire. And I forgot to like make a note, but when he said it, I'm like, oh yeah, I did think that in the moment. I'm like, all right, so maybe Cassandra's going to see the fire when she gets back. Nope, they just left it.
Not a plant at all. Wait, and that might be the one moment you and I both might have had an overlap of losing our minds, was when suddenly she drove a car what seemed to be in the middle of the forest.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, we're right next to a diner. And meanwhile, it looks like they're in they might as well be in the woods where the girls from Yellow Jackets are stranded, you know? And then somehow, oh, you just go a couple feet and there's a diner. This happens repeatedly though. Even Dakota Johnson, who's supposed to be, a EMT, an EMT, a really brave job, you know, one of those like truly selfless workers out there.
Sure, yeah.
And yet for her, it's like, oh, well, you girls, you're your parents' problems. Let them deal with it. She knows they're going to get murdered if she lets them go. And yet she more than once is like, yeah, this is not my problem. This is your parents' problem. And so then we're supposed to care about her. But it's like, I'm sorry. She's literally like these high school girls are just out of their depth. She at least has a slight image of the big picture compared to them. But she also has actual survival skills.
Correct.
And yet is like, yeah, sorry, ladies. Bye. Good luck getting killed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. And Daniel Drew is, we're getting him fired up now, right? The EMT doesn't care about kids. What? And there's the moment where
she doesn't care about humans.
She teaches them, you know, like basically CPR. And it's like, you know,
some of the worst CPR I've ever seen, by the way.
You're a good teacher. And I'm like, you're not a good teacher because the person who you'd be helping would not survive. I did almost lean to you. I'm like, I'm sure that's not going to come factor in at any point later in the movie, but I don't think it actually does. Right. They don't actually perform CPR. Oh, no, they do.
No,
because she drowns at the end of the movie.
Right. But there's even a moment earlier where she's using CPR to save one of her friends. And the way they put it together, she tried for 10 seconds and then stopped. And they go, there's nothing you could have done. And it's like, well, actually, yeah, you could see if you can get his heart going again. Yeah, but it was
there's
like,
a few things you could do.
EMTs, you imagine EMT pulls up, someone's in cardiac arrest. You're like, well, that's a problem. Yeah, we're going to go, but good luck. That was basically the logic of her, is she didn't even try to save his life. And her pushing like this isn't quite it. I know it's being comic book store guy, but the truth is, like, if you have a character who is an EMT and you are filming a lot of scenes involving EMTs, at least get the CPR stuff right, because a lot of us have taken those classes. You probably took that, right, Christian? Like in baby classes?
Yeah, that was part of baby school. Yeah. Yeah.
Neither of us are medical professionals, but we have the rudimentary knowledge of CPR. Most adults do. And
I could have probably consulted on the CPR in this movie better than whoever actually did. Yeah.
But that part lost my mind too. Yes.
Yeah. So Daniel did have a point. I think they did okay with the time powers, but I don't know, something felt off about the editing. So even Daniel being, you know, largely not dissatisfied. So I want to take a quick moment before we wrap up. Daniel talked about something that I didn't think of. So there's Marvel related issues with this movie. It takes place in 2003, is just odd. We kind of talked a little bit about, you know, some of the reasons we thought by, you know, why that would be. And in the comics, Cassandra's a mutant. Now that you can't do that because it's Sony, I don't think it really matters. You know, Venom without Spider-Man, you know, they're able to make that work. I'm guessing what they actually did was based on some actual mythology, but it was just a bit cheap. There are some other aspects that I won't mention since they'd be more spoilery. Daniel, you should spoil this movie for everyone, because the real spoil would be sitting down thinking that you're about to see a good movie. I think that what you want to do is warn people about this movie, you know? When on my honeymoon I got off the ferry in Greece, and the car service the bus from the hotel wasn't there to get us. And immediately some guy started talking to my wife and I about how he would give us a ride. And some lady who, like, you know, sold coffees there, she just made eye contact with me and shook her head no, like this, you know. And I'm like, no, we'll be okay. So, yeah, that's what I want to do for people about this movie. It's almost like I should stand outside where we went.
That was actually the story of Christian's first marriage, which ended abruptly that day. But the second marriage, things went much better.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And look at this. Cowboys Fan 92 subbed to Geekscape. Subbed to you, by the way. You went live. Like your cool vibes. Hey, we do have cool vibes. So thank you, Cowboys fans. And we're not gonna say that we feel bad for the way your season ended. We're gonna have to admit.
You got some New York lovers here, but
this is not the show for that. No.
We wouldn't do that shit.
That's all right. And you know what? That's what we should be able to do, is have fun. In any case, I just want people to know how strongly I feel about this movie. And I think it's important. And don't let anyone tell you that I like everything that gets put out, all the Marvel movies that come out.
You and I tend to be, I think, of your web, that is the Black Cast part of Geekscape Network.
Yes.
You know, you and I tend to be more the optimists, I feel like, in that crowd. Yeah.
It's the same with DC. Nothing. It's the same with anything. When I sit down, I just want to enjoy a movie, any movie. You know, I, you know, wanted to enjoy the first Suicide Squad movie, you know. I thought that I might enjoy the second Suicide Squad more than the first one, you know. And I tend to be optimistic. I don't. So this is an exception, because I had the expectation that this movie was going to be bad. I would have loved to have been proven wrong, even if it was one of those where, like, you know, the first act was okay, you know. I will tell people that I think the 2003 Daredevil with Ben Affleck, I think the first act is actually a very good superhero origin story. It does go off the rails, and I know you don't agree. But in general, like, nobody seemed to like Thor Love and Thunder except us, you know? I think more people like the Marvels than like Love and Thunder. And it was dense. It was a bit of a mess. I kind of liked the Eternals. But I can't say good things about this movie, apart from like one person being cast. And you can't do a good job on casting if your lead is not convincing, not compelling. And honestly, judging from the other Q&A that we shared earlier, not invested in the film or the product. We'll just go ahead and quickly revisit that for a second. For
the three Spider-Man Tom Holland movies.
Yeah.
Should I just go on faith?
Yeah. Oh.
Nothing Spider-Man. Going on behind those eyes.
Yeah. Here he comes.
Here he comes. Yes.
That's number one.
Yep.
Spider-Man.
And I saw that film, but it wasn't a Spider-Man movie.
The other
no,
one,
no, that's
the last
2013
is,
part six.
The Goblet of Spider-Man.
I also saw The Goblet of Man by mistake.
Yeah, that's a very different movie. In any case, in any event, I just don't know. I don't know where else to go. I loved the fact that we had our adventure, Eric. The fact that you and I were able to have our fun-filled day out at the AMC 16 in Burbank, California. If only we had seen a better movie. But I mean, honestly, just take a look at us. Look at how happy we are in that moment. This is after we saw the movie, by the way. So we might be playing it up a little bit for the camera. These may not be genuine happy smiles, you know, because we did have... let's see, 2, 4, 6. So there were 11 people in our screening, you know. So, but we were happy for those minutes that we were there.
I will say, not to defend public nudity or public, lewd conduct. But
this would be the first time that you don't defend public nudity and public conduct.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen, we all try to change as we get older. But the guy who got arrested for masturbating to Sydney Sweeney in this movie, one, he must have been very efficient because she's barely in the film in a sexy outfit. And two, at least he got some pleasure out of this. So to his credit, he turned lemons into lemonade. And I'm very proud. Wow,
that's definitely what he was trying to do.
I hope it wasn't the guy who sat behind us.
No, I assume he was kicked out of the theater before he turned lemons into lemonade. But also, maybe he was just trying to stay awake. I mean, that's entirely possible, right?
Oh, she's in it. She's as Spider-Woman or lady or whatever.
That character is Spider-Woman at one point in continuity. That's not the Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, but it is a Spider-Woman, yes.
So the problem is she was dressed in that outfit, so... for such a brief amount of time, he might have started with that, but he would have completed to Adam Scott.
Oh my
god. Which
goodness.
Is definitely not
by the way. The best thing about this headline is source, Madam
Web updates. Oh,
so
that,
it's like
that's where I get
when
all
these
my
websites
news.
Cite one another. For those of you just jumping in, we did talk about a man was allegedly removed from the Madam Web screening for masturbating to Sydney Sweeney, the Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman. And we don't know if it's true. And for the sake
does
of
it matter?
People who go to movies, we hope things like that aren't happening.
When in doubt, print the legend.
And Daniel saying he had about 10 or so people, 4 of them were a family. Who brings their family to this movie?
I love my children too much.
Yeah. And honestly, maybe like, you know, your kid is like, okay, the little girl who like hands her the drawing and you want to see your movie is probably the only family I can imagine going to see this.
Well, or a 15-year-old who might have stars in his eyes for Sydney Sweeney right now.
That's fair.
I won't lie to you. And I'm trying to usually if I go see a Marvel movie like this before I could see it with my older son, I'll go see it again. It's fine. But this is a tall order. So my younger son and I came up with the idea. We're trying to convince my wife that this was like a Barbie, you know, really sort of strong female message driven film. So she'll take him instead of me for a second viewing.
Well,
she saw through our lies, unfortunately, very quickly.
It didn't work. So nope. what you can do is, you know, we do still have some functional drive-ins here in Southern California. So you could find a drive-in where it's showing. Point the car with your son towards that screen, and then you and your other son sort of sit in the back and look at the other screen, and you guys tune to different stations on some like earbuds, and then you can just watch something else.
That's the only way to do it.
I think I've solved it. And our buddy Craig Robinson with an important question. You mean you're not going to see it twice? I can't imagine ever seeing it again. And William Walton, I didn't even realize that you went. I thought you were just talking about it. At the screening I went to, there were quite a lot of people. I was surprised how many there were, given the reviews I'd seen. Look, I can see, like, oh, I don't know what Madame Web is. People recognize, really, I mean, I think you, Adam Scott, you don't see, like, in the materials where people know his name. But it's like, okay, I've seen Dakota Johnson. Look, people liked those 50 Shades of Grey movies. So I don't know. People like Sydney Sweeney. I can see somebody going to see it. But you, as you said, it's not the only new movie this week, right, Eric?
No, there's One Love. There's the Bob Marley film, which is
Bob Marley is portrayed by someone that we know is a Skrull. It was established last year. So I don't even know if it's a real Bob Marley movie because it's Skrull Bob Marley. But I may check that out at some point. So we'll wind things down in a moment. And I did see your message, Eric, and I will make sure that.
Well, it's a response to also Daniel said there were two couples there for Valentine's Day, but I was going to say, welcome to the third.
I hope they enjoyed their relationship, which ended before the credits. Don't go see it, but if you do go see it, don't stay for the credits. There's no after credits.
Nothing. Not a thing.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything of the sort. So a brief programming note for everyone. Next week, we'll be broadcasting a brand new episode of this show in this time slot, which for like a few weeks, this is our time slot that we've carved out for ourselves. Just for a little while. So Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. I am very excited to next Thursday. So let's see. That is the 22nd or the
21st?
Yeah. The 22nd. Sorry. I didn't quite have it straight in my head. So next Thursday, I'm going to welcome back to this show the great longtime X-Men writer, Chris Claremont. There are some great projects to talk to him about. He's doing a series for Marvel called Madripoor Nights, which continues the famous people know the cover of Uncanny X-Men 268 with Wolverine, Black Widow, and Captain America. It's a continuation sort of that era, that story, I believe set during World War II. And then also for the first time, a reprint of the X-Men Teen Titans crossover that he wrote and Walt Simonson did the artwork for. So we are going to feature that next week in this same time slot where we were on today. And I'm very excited to have him back on. And if you have questions for him, send them to me ahead of time. Full disclosure, I'm going to record it the morning before. But I want to keep it in that time slot. And not doing it live is part of the way to make sure that everything goes off without a hitch. In any case, that'll be next Thursday. And then the Thursday after that, Eric and I will be back together. We'll be doing Geekscape Book Club in that time slot, talking about Echo. And we will, I'll post on social media exactly what it is, but there is a trade paperback of basically the introduction of the character Echo from a few different clumps of issues of the Daredevil series that she debuted in. So we'll be talking about that. And before you know it, we'll be on this show talking about X-Men 97, the brand new animated series. Very excited to be able to talk about that. But Eric, I want to give you a moment to talk about where you are and what you have going on and where people can find you.
Yes, Count Eric Connor. Come stop by at X or at Instagram. Float around social media. And I think you also can find me recovering from this film, most importantly, gearing up for my son's bar mitzvah. So it's a strange time, to say the least, to be in a web that is myself. But I appreciate you all watching.
There's not enough time to re-theme the bar mitzvah as a Madame Web bar mitzvah, right? That
there is, but I might have to hard pass on that. All things are possible.
Okay.
And I think more people are going to be at my son's bar mitzvah next weekend than will be at the box office for Madame Web.
Yeah, well, definitely more than we're in the theater of all of us who have seen it most put definitely. Together, from what it sounds like. You know, we talked about between us, Daniel, and William Walton. I think that you know, there wouldn't be enough to field both sides of a pickup basketball game. I don't
now. Variety is gonna Variety instead of putting box office scores, just gonna list us by name because yeah, it's easier.
Right. No, exactly. I think that might be exactly what happens. But it's also one of those things where the projection for this movie is that it will finish second behind the Bob Marley movie with $25 million. I'm like, that sounds like a lot of dollars. I don't think that's possible. I don't think.
Well, it is over 5 days, though. So and a little bit of a Valentine's Day boost. I don't know what couple needed this to make their love real.
Well, maybe it's the proof that if they can survive this, they can survive anything. I think that
like that's moving really in right before COVID struck. It's the same kind of thing.
Right. Exactly. Well, if you've enjoyed this show, make sure you subscribe to Geekscape. And of course, you can find my personal podcast, The Blackcast, BLADTCAST. There's a YouTube channel and there's also an audio version. You can find it wherever you choose to consume media. I threw myself a birthday party last week with some friends, so you can check that out. And then we're posting the audio version later this week. We did a little roundtable analyzing the four Doctor Who specials for Disney Plus. So you can find content like that over there at the Blackcast. And another show that I co-host is Who Are These Broadcasters on the Who Are These Podcasts YouTube channel. This upcoming Tuesday, we'll be doing it at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So you can find that every Tuesday on Who Are These Podcasts. That is all the time we have for now. And as the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.